Welcome to the Copper and Blue Podcast, Episode 2. I'm Derek Lasuti, a.k.a. Dogbo98, and I'm joined by Alan Hull and Ryan Batty of Copper and Blue. Welcome, guys.
How you doing, Derek? Ryan?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. So I guess the big news is the Horkoff almost finished, not quite finished yet trade. Rumor is Horkoff to Dallas for Daniel Larsson and a 7th-round pick in 20,072 or something like that.
Yeah.
that's pretty much it. Yeah. Depending, so there might be more coming from Edmonton or no rumored salary or anything yet, but there might be a prospect on the way.
Yeah, I think for anybody who's listening to this podcast, we're recording it at about 8 p.m. Edmonton time on Thursday night. So just to give you guys some context, we haven't yet finally heard if there is more going away from Edmonton. So right now we're all scared that they're going to offer up like Marty Gernat or something like that in the deal along with it, because it's already a travesty enough on its own. So
it could be Mitch Moraz, maybe. You never know, right? We could add something in there like that.
Silver line.
Be worse.
Give up Uinek. That'd be okay. Uinek or Moroz.
Make something out of nothing, right? I mean, that's a pretty ugly trade. I don't know what else you can say about that. I mean, it opens up a huge void down the middle for the Oilers. Right now, as it stands, they don't have a healthy center who's under contract.
No.
Well, I guess they have Anton Lander, so look forward to that in September. That'll be great.
Arcobello, I don't even think Arcobello's signed yet, is he?
Yes, he is.
I thought he just got QO'd.
No, he's signed again. So I guess Lander and Arcobello are your 1-2s at the NHL level right now, which tells you how busy the Oilers are going to be tomorrow and in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah,
or at least they better be.
I guess the biggest issue now is you go from you weren't a good team last year, and I mean, as much as Horkoff gets railed and as much as he might have been overpaid and all that other stuff. He filled a role and he did it okay. He did an okay job, and we're definitely worse now, or the Oilers are definitely worse now.
Oh,
I don't think there's any.
Sorry, go ahead, Ryan.
I mean, you can't argue that. You can dislike Horkoff. There's a lot of things he doesn't do, perfectly. He's not a first line center, even if he's paid almost like a first line center. But you have to understand that within the context of the Oilers and their cap situation. His salary wasn't holding the Oilers back. It wasn't costing them anything. So I do agree that going forward, they were going to be tight. There were going to be some issues. They were going to have some salary concerns. I don't think that those concerns were going to exist this year, not to the point that they had to dump him for a 6-7 defenseman and a 7th-round pick in what I assume to be a very deep draft in 2016. Instead, that's the route they go. And now they've opened up a massive hole in their roster that they're left trying to deal with. If they really wanted to go this route, and I guess maybe Horkoff and the Oilers had come to an agreement that we don't know about, that he was definitely not coming back. But to me, I'd have gone one more year. They're reserving a buyout. They only are getting rid of Belanger. So they would have had one more next year. You could have moved him out at that time. Without gutting your team this year, you give McTavish another 12 months to work. I think there might have been a better option. Of course, if they use this cap space tomorrow or over the weekend and they fill that, well, then things look a little bit better. But right now, it doesn't look good. I don't like the trade at all.
Well, I mean, and the other issue is, I think the Oilers, had $16 million in cap space for this year, didn't they? Or something similar to that?
Yeah,
I just saw Tappy say 21 something, and that's with the bonus cushion. So, I mean, we've got money to spend.
No, I meant with Horkoff. Sorry, I meant keeping Horkoff. You still had $15 million in space.
Oh, yeah, we had space this year. You could make it work. I think there was the money to get Gagne done, PRV done, to bring in some guys in your bottom six, a top four defenseman, to do all of that and retain Horkoff. Now, you've opened this up, and that's fine if you're going to replace him, right? You have to replace him, though. And I don't know, I see the Oilers working from a bit of a position of weakness here, and I don't know that that's going to get you a good deal when you're dealing with a free agent either, right? Free agents are already expensive,
well,
and now you're in a position of weakness. I don't like it.
Yep, that's my thought process. I mean, virtually everybody in the Oilers blogosphere has been talking about Boyd Gordon as an option for a tough minute center to kind of fill the void for Horkoff, assuming that he wasn't going to be coming back. If you're Boyd Gordon and you were going to take, I don't know, what, 2.25 to come to Edmonton, you know, if that's what they were offering, my asking price just went up another $500,000 because you just traded away the only guy that you had that could do my job. So you are now desperate for me to come in and play for you.
Absolutely, I agree. All the Oilers have done now is put dug a further hole in their lineup. Sure, they got the money to spend, but who are you going to spend it on? You got to sign a bunch of players. I mean, we were talking earlier. How many players they got to sign? 8, 9? Just to field an NHL team. Never mind a good NHL team.
Yeah, well, I think the bright side of what McTavish has done so far this year is he has cleared a lot of dead wood, and virtually all of the decisions he has made, save Horkoff and Hemsky, those are different situations, of course, but he's gotten rid of all the right guys. I mean, you can't fault him for not qualifying Plante and Tubert and Peckham, and I certainly don't fault him for letting Petrell and Smithson and Fistrick and Ryan Jones walk away. Like, those are all good choices by my evaluation. But you need bodies. You need guys who are going to come in and play. And right now, you're nowhere close to having an NHL lineup. So they are going to need to be, just out of sheer necessity, they're going to need to be one of the busiest teams in free agency this summer because they don't have... Like you said, they don't have the bodies to ice an NHL roster right now.
Well, I mean, we might be begging for Jared Smithson in a couple of weeks, so...
If it ever reaches that, I'm not vlogging anymore.
So we talk about needs. I mean, the one that we've always needed since the end of last year was a top six winger to play with Gagné and Yakupov.
Yeah, and I think there's two things of note in the news tonight that... To touch on that one really quickly, one of them is there's been a number of reports that the Oilers are very hard after David Clarkson. I'm assuming, haven't heard from you guys directly on what your thoughts are on that, that you guys will be as lukewarm to cold on that as I am, considering what his asking price is going to be. And the other news that's coming out this evening is that Clark MacArthur is in Edmonton and has been in Edmonton for the last couple of days. And has been at least speaking to Dallas Eakins and Keith Acton. So those are two guys who MacArthur is my top choice for that spot, and Clarkson is sort of not, just because it's going to cost $6 million to get him.
I think you're probably right. I mean, hasn't MacArthur to Edmonton been rumored for, I don't know, 4 years? Every time someone talks about a move, we're getting MacArthur. Seems like I've heard that forever. I would probably do the same thing though. I would put him higher on my list. Clarkson less so. It's just, you know, I see Clarkson as being identified as the more premier option, and that's going to cost you a little bit more. I don't know that the difference in value is going to be substantial over the length of that contract.
Yeah.
It's just that the Oilers have that perceived need for size, right? And that's what Clarkson brings. But to me, other than that, MacArthur is the superior player. If you take size out of the equation, if given the choice of all matters being equal, I would take MacArthur over Clarkson straight up. Let alone the $3 million price tag that he's going to have over MacArthur. But he brings that big body that they want in their top six. So
yeah, I mean, I like both players, but the biggest question is how much are they going to cost? I mean, Clarkson at $4 million is a lot more tolerable than Clarkson at $6 million, and I don't think you're getting him at four.
He'll be six. He'll be six.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I agree.
To me that's kind of nuts. This league pays for size far more than they should. To be honest with you, I get the desire. It's nice, but you know, Clarkson is a good hockey player. He's a nice hockey player, but you can't be paying him north of six. and saying, you know, I know there's a premium given to free agents over a restricted free agent, but, you know, I look at Clarkson at say, let's just for argument's sake, it's six flat, and I don't think that's probably likely, but you put that right up against Taylor Hall, and you try to understand where you're getting your value from. It's out of whack. Of course, the RFA, UFA thing plays into the equation there, but it's nuts when you start paying for a big body that doesn't do everything. I'd rather pay for the more all-around player, personally.
Well, I'd rather give it to Stephen Weiss than Clarkson.
Yeah, I'd rather get Gagne out of the middle, too. You know what I mean? If you're going to pay $6 million, I'd rather pay it to Weiss to get Gagne away from center than I would pay it to Clarkson. The other point on that is just that Clark MacArthur, you know, is probably. I was talking to James Myrtle earlier over Twitter, and he thinks MacArthur's only going to come in at like 3 to 3.5. So it's almost half your cost, and you can use, you know, the other $2.5 million to go get a Boyd Gordon or whoever that's going to be to fill one of your center holes.
Yeah, absolutely. If I mean you're talking at that cost, sure. I mean you could sign a bunch of guys that'll be good NHL players if you can get them at that money. I don't know if you will because. We always see it. We see it all the time in the NHL. When there's the weak free agent class, teams don't care. They're still paying the top money for it, and then they'll go and buy these guys out in 3 years' time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it remains to be seen what he gets. I think he's more of a 3 to 4 guy than a 6 guy. But the other thing for the Oilers to think about when they're talking about putting $6 million in David Clarkson is assume for just a minute that everybody – all of their core guys are going to get the same deal that Hall got because Hall's your best player, so you try to keep everybody in that same salary structure. So Hall is at $6 million. Eberle's at $6 million. You would re-sign Yakupov and Nugent-Hopkins for $6 million apiece. You get Clarkson at $6 million. You get Gagne at $5 million. You've now got all six of your top six forwards. You're paying over $5 million. How long are you going to be able to sustain that in a cap system?
Better hope revenues go up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, if it's $75 million, you're probably okay. I mean, so you're gonna have a bit of a buffer, right? Because Yakupov's a couple years away.
The problem is, you have a bit of a window, but
it certainly gets tight in a hurry.
Yeah,
yeah. The other problem is with the cap going up. Is Yakupov gonna say, okay, I'll take $6 million too?
Well,
I actually think that's one of the most maybe misunderstood things is everybody looked at Hall and Eberle grab the same deal last year, the same money. They technically paid Eberle more because they didn't get as many free agent years. That's its own issue. That's fine. But I don't think you can just blindly think that everybody down the road is going to sign for $6 million. I know Detroit did it for years. No one makes more than Lidstrom, but are you always going to get that system? And, you know, can you ask 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds to fall in line with that? Are they going to fall in line with that? I mean, it'd be nice if they did. You know, I could see it happening, but it only takes one of them to push it too, right? We have a situation where Malkin's making more than Crosby now. That people wouldn't have thought that to be the case before. Well, so just what one signs for, assuming it trickles down, is probably a little unlikely.
The one spot there, though, is that that Malkin deal is his third contract. You're talking about seconds, where you look at what Seguin got. You know, he got less than four and stuff. So if you go for these guys 7 or 8 years at $6 million, you know, unless there's a massive, drastic change in the market in the next two seasons, which is quite possible, right now I think it's a feasible thing to try and get everyone for around that same price tag, but... You know, that we're starting to get away too much from what they need to do in the next 2 weeks, let alone the next 2 years.
No, but one of the problems is the as that cap goes up, the price to re-sign an RFA, the compensation goes up. So $6 million might not net you what it does today in terms of compensation. So Yakupov and those guys may be looking at, you know, an RFA offer sheet only gives the Oilers of $6 million only gives the Oilers a first and a third. Versus what it gives them now.
That's true.
So, yeah, anyway, going back to the other needs, assuming the Hemsky trade's on the way, which is, I mean, based on the Horkov trade, we got to believe it's possible now, Oilers are also going to need a third-line center and a winger to play with Pjärvi.
Yeah, well, the other news of the day is Grabowski being bought out, right? So, I mean, he instantly has to jump towards the top of the list for a guy that you want to consider bringing in to... He's so versatile. You know what I mean? For people who aren't familiar with Grabowski, he's a guy who's put up, you know, 55 to 60 points a couple of times. You know, when he was playing with top six players and in an offensive role, he was producing at almost a top line center kind of rate. But then this past season, they buried him in a really, really, really tough assignment. With playing with much lesser players in much tougher zone starts, and he still came out smelling like roses in terms of possession. You know, although the offensive numbers certainly took a dip, but I mean, the guy can handle the tough assignments, or if you put him into an offensive situation, he can produce. And that kind of versatility is gold, especially for a team that's this thin at center. You know, you can bring him in to be your two center and move Gagne to the wing, or if you bring in another guy that has some offense and you want to drop him down and have him play on that third line, he can do both. So he would be right near the top of my list. Boyd Gordon, I gotta hope they're talking to him already.
Yeah, I agree.
They need that guy. I don't know who they get if they don't get him. You know, and then I see them getting a guy like a Matt Hendricks or something like that from Washington. I'm not a fan of that, but a guy who can win a face-off, play on the fourth line, and you know, hit a bunch of people. And that's not my idea of a great free agent signing, but I think he fits what they've advertised they're looking for.
Yeah, I mean the only thing with Grabowski is the rumor was he wasn't too fond of his role in Toronto this year, so you basically got to sell him on, okay, well, you're gonna come to Edmonton and you're either selling him as the second line center and moving Gagne to the wing, or you're selling him on the same job in Edmonton, which he wasn't really a fan of. He did it as well as anyone could expect, minus obviously Leaf management and Carlisle, but. I think that's a tough sell to get him here as the third liner in a defensive zone start situation.
Well, I think I'll let Ryan chime in on this in just a sec, but I think you bring him in a top six role, but it's just nice to have that flexibility that, you know, if you bring him in as your two center and then I always go back to Boyd Gordon, but say you bring in him too and he gets hurt. You know, instead of if you don't have a guy on the farm who can come in and play those minutes, you can drop Grabowski down and bring up Arcabello. You know what I mean? Or he just gives you flexibility in your lineup. I think that's what's valuable.
I would question whether our third line will be exactly the same role. I know, you know, positionally wise, it's going to look similar. With everything McTavish has said and talked about, with really wanting a skill team. He doesn't want to chip and chase. I mean, he said that repeatedly on the conference call with the season ticket holders. He said it in his press conferences. I have a feeling our third line might be a little bit more speed than it was in Toronto under Carlisle, which, you know, he tried to have four face punchers in that lineup on a nightly basis there, right? Saw real value in them. So I think maybe you could sell him that, you know, even if you ended up on our third line, we're going to play you with, you know, skilled guys. Now, do they have the skilled guys on their third line? Probably not if they start moving out Hemsky, for example. I mean, what are you doing with your right wing? Who are your three right wingers now, you know? So you can say you're going to do it, but you got to have the horses to actually follow through.
Oh, they got to get a three right wing. They don't have one. I mean, Pajarvi can play either side, but they need to get a winger for that three line and then Pajarvi on your opposite side.
Well,
don't trade Hemsky.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Don't trade Hemsky. And you could roll Hemsky, Grabo, and Pajarvi is a pretty damn good third line, I think.
I think I put an article up a few weeks ago and I said my one choice on the right wing for that third line was Kuhlman. And if you can't get Kuhlman, my second best option is don't trade Hemsky.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, actually, I think your best option is don't trade Hemsky, but I mean,
that works for me too.
That's just me as a Hemsky fan, right? So, the other position that I mean, kind of got lost in the shuffle is D. Alan and I talked about it in the first podcast. The Oilers need defensemen. I mean, we talked. Just saw Tom Gilbert put on waivers and get bought out. I'm a fan. I know a lot of the Copper and Blue guys are fans. I know a lot of the fans aren't fans, but, I mean, he gives you something you need.
He does. I've seen a number of reports from, you know, the guys who are in a position to know, like the Stauffers and Tensors and stuff like that, who are directly connected to the team, and they seem to be pretty cool on the idea of Gilbert coming back, so I don't think anybody should get their hopes up on it. I'd certainly be open to it, for sure. I think he's a, you know, he's a guy who can move the puck and handle some pretty serious minutes and handle the opposition's top guys and everything. But I don't foresee it happening, and I think the Oilers are really probably almost going to have to look through trade. I don't see a lot of really appealing options in the free agent market for D.
I kind of look at Gilbert this way. I mean, I run down the Oilers' existing defense, and right now, going into training camp, who would be better than Tom Gilbert, if that's the route you want to go? It's a short list. It really, really is. And he's potentially going to cost you south of, what, $3 million, $3.5 million? That's pretty cheap. That's a good deal. I know there seems to be some resistance to bring anybody back. I don't get why. If they're a good player and they were here before, that shouldn't eliminate a good player from potentially being added to your team. To me, I'd be jumping at that, but I wouldn't have traded Tom Gilbert in the first place, so maybe I'm a little biased.
I don't think any of us would.
No, not at all.
I wouldn't have, okay, I would have traded Tom Gilbert. I wouldn't have traded him in that trade.
No.
How's that?
Yeah. And sure, to get better, yeah. I don't think that was a trade that got us any better, though.
So we haven't even touched on the idea of goaltending yet. I don't think we've really solved the blue line or anything, to be sure. But we talked about there being a number of holes at center that they need to fill. As an organization, your number two goalie right now is Olivier Roy, who is basically an ECHL goalie.
Yep, and I mean that's a problem. Especially when you bring in a guy like Hoivonen last year, who wasn't even better than Waugh, so that you could put Waugh back down to the ECHL. So you need at least a backup goaltender at the NHL level, and then you need a guy who can fill that Gerber type role, where you know what, he's your AHL goalie, but he can come up to the NHL in a pinch.
Yeah, I would think that Jan Denis is still in that conversation for the AHL starter. I know he hasn't had much opportunity at the NHL level, and he didn't exactly play great in the little opportunity that he did have. But he certainly is a proven AHL starter, and someone who is not completely incompetent at the NHL level. As far as an NHL backup, my guy is Jason LaBarbera. To me, that's the guy. And Devin Dubnyk, I think, did an interview with Jim Matheson where Matheson was asking him about all the chaos at the draft and, you know, what his opinions were on the Schneider ordeal and everything. And he was mentioning guys that he would like to see come in to partner with him next year. And he specifically mentioned LaBarbera. I think they have a history of training together or something. If there's a good rapport between those two and there's a connection with your starter, then, that's more of a reason to consider him for that.
Yeah, I agree.
Go ahead, Derek.
Okay. We talked about it last week.
I struggle with...
No, go ahead.
Okay. Derek, go.
All right. We talked about it last week, LaBarbera, and... I agree. I mean, he's a decent NHL goalie. He's obviously fine with being a backup. And I mean, if your starting goalie says bring him in, I mean, what do you got to lose?
Yep.
It's a fair way of looking at it. I mean, I don't like any goalies. I've never been able to identify the ones that are going to be around for a while. I can't figure out what makes them tick. They're a tough one to grasp, right? So you do want a guy who's comfortable in that role. Obviously, the intent is to have Dubnyk playing 60 games next year. If he doesn't, I think we're in trouble, just to be totally honest. But a guy like LaBarbera, who's played a little bit, he'd certainly be an option there. I've seen Khudobin's name tossed around a little bit. Pretty small sample size with that. It looks good in a small sample. I won't deny that. But, you know, if you have any injury to Dubnyk, all of a sudden you're basically going with an untested goalie. I don't know that that's the gamble you want to make.
Well, yeah, I can agree with Khudobin as an option too. He'd probably be number two on my list, behind LaBarbera. The guy though I'm not super thrilled on is the idea of Ray Emery, because I feel like I'm gonna have to pay him too much. I think Emery is coming in somewhere. He's basically said today that he's not going back to Chicago because he wants an environment where he has the ability to be a 1A kind of goalie and you know, start close to 50% of the games, if not more. And, you know, like you say, that's not the situation that you're looking for. You want someone who's going to push Dubnyk, but you don't want someone coming in expecting to get 35 games, because realistically, like you say, if Dubnyk's not playing 55 to 60 games next year, the Oilers are in trouble.
Yeah, even if he's hurt. I mean, we talk about, oh, if Dubnyk gets hurt, the Oilers season's done. Yeah. What the roster they have now, they're unless they become a Chicago Blackhawks that can, you know, cover for any goaltending, you know what, it really does. If you lose Dubnyk, your season's done. So worrying about a guy who can play, you know, 50 games as a backup, you know, just find a guy who can play 20 to 30 games, who's willing to play the backup, and that's who you go with.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that there's a chance that that's who they get. I actually feel like that might be one that they get right tomorrow. But, I mean, time will tell. Honestly, coming from the Tambellini era, my expectations are so low that I feel like they're going to do everything wrong. I feel like we're going to come out of tomorrow with Matt Hendricks and Eric Nystrom and Ray Emery and David Clarkson. And it's just like, some of those guys are NHL players, but they wouldn't have been any of the guys that I would have picked to help this turn this team into a team that wins.
You forgot Philip Kuba.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Oh.
And don't forget, they all get no trade and no moves. Or, no, that's Jay Feaster. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we don't know yet, right? Maybe it's Mac T, too. We've never seen.
Though. I mean, you talked a good game. It's, again, this is the hardest part, right? Is going from this is what I want to do to, oh, shit, no one wants to sign here or no one wants to trade with me. Now what do I do?
Maybe that was a little bit of a rookie mistake there. It wouldn't have been something I'd have said. I wouldn't have tossed out how big I wanted to be, that I wanted to move out Horkoff and Hemsky. I know it only takes two teams to create a bidding war, and maybe that's what he's trying to do with both Horkoff and Hemsky. But if you don't create two teams, if you just have interest from one, you end up with a deal where you get an established third-line center with an admittedly high contract, you get a seventh defenseman and a seventh-round pick. I don't think that was a bidding war situation. And, you know, I think maybe he played his hand a little bit too much. Maybe he thought it'd be easier to get a trade done. I don't know. I'm not going to rip him too much because I think at best he was only ever going to be able to do about half. He was only going to be able to repair half the damage Tambellini did in 1 year. I mean, Tambellini ripped it apart for quite a while. It wasn't going to get rebuilt in a day. He's got to follow through.
Yeah, on that point, I'm amazed at how much he's been able to do. And I mean, it worked out well in terms of expiring contracts and all of that kind of thing, which the one thing you can give Tambellini is he never, other than Habibulin, he never really hamstrung the organization with a really long, stupid contract. McTavish has been able to, you know, get rid of all of the players who are really sub-replacement NHL players off of the Oilers roster in virtually no time. Like, basically, they've played two games under the regime of Craig McTavish, and most of the bad players are gone. It's just a question of the fact that he hasn't had any good players to replace them yet. But that's...
Yeah, I mean, all he's done is not do anything, right? I mean, it was almost Steve Tambellini-esque in the way he got rid of those guys. He just didn't do anything. I mean, we'll have to see if he
didn't do anything with the right guys, though. I guess that's my point. It's a small thing, but it's not nothing.
Well, that's like
I guess you're right. He at least identified the players, right? He identified the guys that don't belong here and made sure they didn't come back. So in that way, he did something. He made a decision. So he's a mile ahead already.
Well, Steve Tambellini traded Steos for a third round pick too. So
yeah, that one will that will confuse me till the day I die.
All right, I think of that that about wraps us up for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, comments and any suggestions in the comment section. And hopefully we'll be back next week. Thanks a lot, Ryan. Thanks a lot, Alan.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.